This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It's Mike Schope and the Bulldog.
Here's what's going to happen. I am going to have to fix you. Manage you to on a more personal scale. A more micro form of management. What is that called?
Microgerment.
Boom. Yes.
It's Mike Schope.
What is your name, sir?
I am Bill Buttlicker.
And the Bulldog.
Really, that's your real name? How dare you? My family built this country, by the way.
It's Mike Schope.
The three words I would describe you as is aggressive,
yes.
Hostile, and definitely difficult.
And the Bulldog.
Well, I like the sound of your voice.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back. We're rolling on from yesterday. It's the talk of the town. It happened here. We're not about to slow down here yet. It really was, I think, almost the talk of the league yesterday, the way that clip of Brandon Bean got around. A lot of people commenting on not just how he sounded. I mean, rare to hear an NFL executive seem so upset, but what he was saying. 803-0550. Here is Cleveland next. Hello, Cleveland.
How you doing today, guys? I've been a Buffalo Bills fan since I used to listen to the Bills on the radio in the late 80s, and them and the Dallas Cowboys were perennial losers. I mean, like, they were winning one and two games a year. So I've been a fan for a long time. And I feel like, you know, we need to remember the GM history of the likes of Russ Brandon and Buddy Nix and Doug Whaley, where we were hoping to break even. So if Bean sounded defiant or defensive, he should have. Because like one of you guys pointed out, it's inconsistent to talk about his misses in the draft without talking about the gems that he made, that he's also found in the draft. And I want to also talk about Kincaid, as because I think it's unfair to him as well, because I understand what you were saying about, you know, he catches 70 passes his rookie year, let's make them more significant. But we forget the second year, Chase Claypool was supposed to be the number one receiver and got hurt in IR. And we basically came out of training camp saying Kincaid was the number one pass catcher.
Well, Claypool was never supposed to be the number one receiver.
It was by default. I understand that. But knowing that, the league must have known that as well and would have paid attention to him. And, of course, he's not going to be as significant in his second year. Also knowing that most players, especially in a Bean system, takes about 3 years to, quote-unquote, develop.
How do we know that?
So, I'll say this personally. For me, I think it's just common sense, because these kids coming out of college might need to add a little bit more meat to their bones, might need to polish their technique here and there. They're going to learn things in the process that they didn't learn in college. I mean, I don't think anyone thought Keon Coleman was going to be a route runner, so I don't think why people were surprised that he wasn't a route runner. So basically,
the surprise might have been that they chose a player who wasn't a route runner. That was maybe the surprise.
Absolutely.
Cleveland.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so here, I'll just leave it at this. You know, I think McDermott has done a great job. I think Beam's done a great job. I think that we don't give enough credit to Josh Allen making players better. Hell, we had Stephon Diggs when he was one of the best receivers in the league. What's the difference between when we had him in our finish last year? The same. That is no Super Bowl. So obviously, it's not as if a number one wide receiver is that much of a big deal for our offense. Obviously, the issue is our defense has to stop giving up 25, 30 points a game. And that's exactly what we addressed. And I can't understand the nitpicking and the selective outrage because we didn't get a number one receiver.
Well, you know, we do our best to explain ourselves. I mean, maybe it's not always easy to understand, and maybe we don't make good points, but we do our best. So hopefully some of it comes across.
Yeah.
The point about – what do you want to say?
Who was outraged about receiver? Outraged. Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead.
It's just
– I'll wait.
The point about – life without Bean and McDermott someday is really not going to be an interesting conversation. It isn't an interesting conversation to have. Because for every point you want to make, whatever side you're on, any point you want to make about like how they've topped out, why it's maybe time for a different set of eyes, anything is always going to be met with, don't you remember Kay Stevenson? Don't you remember Buddy Nix? You can remember Buddy Nix and the drought and have even lived through it. And even, dare I say it, 1984 and 5 and still think, you know what? There are points at which you feel like you can't go any further.
Yeah.
And that's teams that are not as good as the Bills, where it's more palatable, I suppose. And it's sometimes teams like this. This happens in sports. It happened with Manning's Colts. It happened with Reed's Eagles. It just, you can, it makes sense to think about, all right, I'm good enough to win a championship. I think, why can't I do it? And so what do I do about it? I've drafted offense. I've drafted Dalton Kincaid. I've drafted, it's the year 8. I've drafted all these kind of different players, types, groups of players, different philosophies. And yet there I am at Arrowhead Stadium and I can't get a stop or I can't get a first down and it's over. You want to just do? I've said this. You want to just leave it at Bean and McDermott forever? You can. You're going to get to the AFC Championship. I mean, maybe you'll win one, but if you don't, still, you want to just leave it at them forever because you remember the Dick Geron days, or do you want to try something different? And I think both are reasonable. And I think that particular debate is just kind of a ping pong game, and you can kind of know what everybody's going
to
say.
Right, because the person who wants to tell you, like our guest last Wednesday, Nick Kostos, from our Odyssey wagering family, they're never going to win with McDermott. If that's your position, and I know that I have close personal friends of mine who feel strongly that way, they haven't been wrong yet. Like, so you're gonna have that on your side, and that's like you got an endless magazine to fire that shot. You're never gonna run out of ammunition because you're never gonna be wrong until they actually win, and then nobody's gonna care that you felt that way. It's most notably probably you.
Whoops.
So you know, look, all everyone's trying to do here is figure out how to get them to the place we all want to go. And, you know, none of us have any real power in that equation. We're just observing and talking. Bean has not had a rough ride here from fans or media because they've won 5 AFC East titles in a row, and they've hit on enough players, and enough people give them credit for the good players they hit, and don't discredit them as that was lucky, but boy, Kyrie Elam, what a horrible miss. Most fans are, you know, more down the middle, like, this is pretty good. But what we're trying to do, like the funnel, you're going up and up and up and up, and eventually you get to the spot where, like, you got to squeeze through there, and they haven't squeezed through yet. And so it is nitpicking. Absolutely guilty. Because what we're trying to do is figure out how they can do the hardest thing to do, which is not just beat the Chiefs, but then beat some other team from the NFC that hopefully isn't having like some miracle Mark Rippon MVP year or something. Like, you got to get there and you got to get it done. And so The job is no longer to just be pretty good and end the drought and even win the division. You keep going up and up, and the demands get stronger and harder to accomplish. That is life, climbing the ladder. So I don't envy where they are, because right now on the timeline, I think, at some point, I don't know that it'll be this year definitively that I'll even feel that way, but at some point they got to figure out how to finish this, how to close it out. And until they do, this is the conversation.
I guess I take exception to the word nitpicking, because it's like somewhat insulting, at least. What's another way to put it? You're trying to perfect it. Is that nitpicking? I've got a team that's like A-minus grade, A to A-minus grade, but it's not A-plus. Should I leave it alone and just keep doing right. What I'm doing? And, you know, people think, yes, I've thought it, you know, previously. Just, yes. Is it nitpicking to want to improve from here? I don't think that's nitpicking. I think you're pointing, it's kind of like inherent to our jobs. You're pointing out their flaws and the concerns as a rule. Like, that's what we're here for. It's what we do. And it hasn't, like you said about Bean, it hasn't been easy the last few years to find, okay, we got to talk about this. This is bad. Because very little almost anything has been bad. It's not. This isn't nitpicking. This is, all right, well, it's tougher when it's this way. It's easy when you're the Browns. We need everything.
Right. We have,
there's no bad idea.
Yeah.
The Sabres.
The drought was easy. I mean,
right.
it was terrible, and it was demoralizing and taxing emotionally, but from a what should they do standpoint, I mean, it was endless. Draft a quarterback. Don't draft a quarterback. Fix the offensive line. I mean, it was always there. This is, you know, the margins.
Fire the coach. Who says no? When it's like that, who says no?
Right, right, right.
Only Paul says no, because Paul will tell you, how do you know you're going to get somebody better? Right. And a lot of people would say that too.
Well, the somebody better point, look, to make that argument, I don't really need Dick Geron or Kay Stevenson. What I might rather think about is Phil Housley and Ralph Krueger and Jason Bottrell and Tim Murray and other people who have failed at the job when hired by Terry Pegula. I admit, like, whenever this subject comes up, almost inevitably, if they don't get on the air, it's there. I see it on hold or on my Twitter feed. Like, aren't you terrified of Terry Pegula replacing these people because of his track record of failure in hiring Sabres people? I admit, yes, I'm nervous about that. It should not ever stop you from making a change if you have to make a change, because ultimately what you're doing is you're settling for, if Terry Pegula at any point thinks, you know what, it's enough, they're not going to, three times, four times, five, we're knocking on the door, I got to do something. And if he stops himself because he hired or stood by while Ralph Krueger was hired as his hockey coach and says, I can't do it, that would be insanity. You have to try to get better. And where the Sabres right now have a tremendous difficulty, I think, reputation-wise, attracting the best, the brightest and the best people because of where they are and what they're enduring here, the Bills, if they were to want to make a change next February, do you think the best and the brightest in the NFL world would not want to work with Josh Allen? I mean, it would be a sought-after job. You would at least have the ability to attract the A-list candidates, I would think. But anyway, I'm getting pretty far down the road here. It's just, I understand any fear about ownership making changes, because the track record on the other side of the street from the Bills is pretty rancid.
Thank you, Cleveland. I enjoyed talking to you. Bulldog at you. I didn't want to leave you out.
I did as well.
Getting connected with the fans brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. I don't remember Jim Ringo as the Bills coach. Chuck Knox was my first Bills coach, by the way. If you're wondering, and you probably were not, but if you're not in Western New York, warm and very windy today, some pop-up thunderstorms. Got to watch out for those, Bulldog.
I will.
Near record warmth or mid-70s. 77 I saw earlier today for late April. We've got hockey tonight.
The Leafs.
Lots of hockey tonight.
Four games tonight.
Four games tonight. Right. Leafs can close out. Hurricanes can close out.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
The other two out west, I think, are both 2-2.
Correct.
Going into game five. So, yeah.
Also, in personal news, I just drafted Joe Flacco in a league.
Well, good for you.
So, lay out for me what you would want to have happen if you were the Browns. Not some, like, miracle Sanders or Dylan Gabriel as rookies are just undeniable, and you have Russell Wilson as a rookie on your hands. I mean, that... What would be your plan? Whether the coach was behind drafting Sanders after they drafted another rookie or not, that's what he's got now. And he's got Joe Flacco, and he's got Kenny Pickett and Watson, but Watson won't be there.
Right.
So how would you play it? They're having these meetings right now. How are we going to do this?
I would get rid of one of the veterans.
You would?
Yes. I've got two young guys and someone who's got experience, and maybe Flacco's the guy I hang on to, because at least I know he helped me get to the playoffs 2 years ago. Maybe I can expect some of that to still reoccur here. And so I think I would want, for like practical purposes, a four-man competition doesn't seem that great an idea to me. Three can be hard enough, I think. So I think I would want the other two guys to have a chance to get enough snaps to have it matter with only one of the veterans in the way. And I think the talent, I mean, look, I did not like Sanders as an idea, as a first round pick. By the end of Friday night, I thought it was, I don't know, criminals too strong, but it was insane that he wasn't selected yet. Mm-hmm. Now that whatever message that could have been getting sent by the league, by whatever, I mean, there's a lot that goes into Sanders. The personality, the family, he's like the face of college football toppling here to an extent, right? The NIL money, all the stuff. And so it's conceivable to me that the league in mass wanted to like, just
teach him a lesson.
Just hold him down a little bit and humble him. And I don't know, mission accomplished, but he should absolutely, to me, be more talented than the other kid they drafted. And I think I would want to be real about that and recognize that.
Not everybody will say that about Gabriel. I said a thing like this, like what you just said, mm-hmm. on ADP Chasing this morning, and one of my three co-hosts went, not me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sanderson likes Gabriel more than Sanders.
Okay. Well, my premise is that's the more talented guy, so I think, you know, despite all the hoopla and how big of a deal it was that he lasted as long as he did and all the stuff, now it's time to go play football. And, like, which is my best chance? And I think he's probably it, Sanders. Like, I would shade Sanders for the Browns myself.
Week one?
I mean, yeah, I guess, yeah. I think I would want him to win the job. And let's see. He's the best chance to be decent out of that group.
I don't know how you... I mean, it's not like you can't do it, but the Browns and the Giants, and maybe there's another one, signed multiple veterans or traded for. Like, they have... I'm counting Pickett. Mm-hmm. They acquired two veterans each, Giants with Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston, and then drafted Jackson Dart. The Browns with Flacco and Pickett, and then drafted two rookies.
I don't know how you move a veteran. Like, it just doesn't happen. Why do the Giants need Jameis Winston now, right? Is he a mentor? He's third string? What is he to the Giants? They have Russell Wilson and they have Jackson Dart. And they probably have some DeVito or somebody. Maybe not him. Anyway, why do they need Jameis Winston? What does he do for them?
Probably nothing.
They're bad. If they catch, you know, if they're a miracle team, so be it. But does he save them if they're good? I mean, just like what do you do here? So you would think, like, that's logical. Move him. But the league didn't really want him in the first place, and you signed him, and what, are you going to trade him now? It just doesn't seem like that would happen. So I'm kind of living with the reality that I think the Browns have four. And they could cut one, and they maybe will by the time they get through camp or through the preseason.
I would even want to do it earlier just for working purposes, but, you know. I strongly would doubt. I guess I would want to say in both cases, both teams, I know the scenarios are different. The level of prospect is different, although, I don't know, I guess a week ago, many people didn't think that Jackson Dart and Shedeur Sanders were that far apart in the draft, but they ended up being, 100 picks or more apart in the actual draft. I don't think either team goes with the two veterans. One of them is going to play. The other one is in the way of the kid, or a kid, or maybe even two kids. So I would expect both of those teams at some point. It might take until the end of August, but I would expect Winston and Pickett to be available to a team that goes, oh, my backup got hurt. I need a guy.
You're Flacco over Pickett.
Yes.
And we're both Wilson over Winston.
Yes.
Okay.
But I think both scenarios, I would expect that one of those veteran guys to go. And in my case, I'm saying Winston and Pickett.
Yeah. Eventually.
Yeah.
What do you even do with them in the preseason? What needs to be shown? You have no plans for Jameis Winston. You have no plans for him at all. You want to see Dart, get him work in the preseason. Maybe you want to see Wilson. It's a new team.
Yeah.
Winston doesn't probably sit the whole time, but what is the actual purpose of it? Well, let's just throw Jameis in there. Why? Well, he's never going to run our offense. He's never going to be on. Right. You just don't do that either.
You keep him around until the final preseason game. He plays every snap of it, and then you cut him, is horrible. But that would be my most likely outcome.
You're saying that that's like even optimal, which maybe it is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Nobody gets hurt. Right. I mean, the Bills have brought in quarterbacks to do that, and with the sole intention of cutting them the next day.
Then that's exactly what they did.
I went to one of those games. Was that Leinart or Vince Young? Who did I watch at the stadium one night when it was one of those games? Didn't I watch one of them?
I don't know.
Both, maybe? Neither was on the Bills for a regular season game.
Right.
Right?
Chris Sims is another. No, not Chris. Matt Sims.
Matt Sims.
Matt Sims played. It couldn't have been that one because that was in Detroit. He made the most hilarious looking play you've ever seen in your life.
He was behind Manuel, maybe. I remember where I was. I wasn't at the game. I remember where I was when I was watching it, though.
Yeah.
Holy cow. The Bills lose like 38-7 or something like that, maybe. And those glorious Bills-Lions preseason years, the many years of that rivalry. Best preseason rivalry in the league.
I think if you don't know what we're talking about, I could go find.
You're too young.
You're YouTube-versed. Put in the search engine at YouTube, Matt Sims Bills, and I'd be stunned if any other play comes up than the play I'm talking about. That's one of the most hilarious plays you've ever seen in a, I'll use finger quotes, NFL game.
18
it was a fourth preseason game.
Million views. Sal joined us before to get into some other draft topics. That's next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.